Welcome to installment 261 of Sefer HaMitzvahs from the Rambam. Today's portion contains four commandments. Positive commandment 181, involving the procedure when someone finds a murdered person and one does not know who murdered him, with a procedure of decapitating a calf, an egla arufa. Prohibition number 309 is associated with that procedure, that in the place where the egla arufa is done, one is prohibited from working the land or planting there. Prohibition 298 is the prohibition not to leave an object which could cause damage to people on your property. And positive commandment 184 is the associated positive commandment that one is required to remove such dangerous objects or situations from one's property, and specifically through building a mica, a gate around one's roof, so a person should not fall off. Prohibition 181 is the law of Egla Arufa. The law is described in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 21, verse 1, which begins, Ki motze chol badoma, when you find a dead body on the land, which means we have found a dead body and we are unsure who killed this individual and we are not able to find the murderer. In that case, what is done? There is a ceremony which is brought as a kind of atonement for the people of the nearby city, as the Chumash describes what must be done, that elders, judges, and as the Rambam explains in his legal code, five judges from the Sanhedrin in Jerusalem must come and measure to see which city is closest to this dead body. And even should the body be found directly next to a city, it is a law of the Torah that it must be measured. Afterwards, the elders of this city and the judges must come to the place where the dead body was. The body is buried there, and then they carry out the ceremony of the Egla Rufa. Egla means a calf, and the calf must be under 2 years old. Arufa speaks about the way the calf is killed. A kind of hatchet is taken, a kupit, and its neck is broken from the back. There's a medrash which says that the calf is actually only hit on the back of the neck, and thereafter remains alive and actually will run and reveal to everyone who the murderer is. But in his legal code, the Rambam says that we actually kill the calf in this manner. Afterwards, the elders of the city wash their hands over this decapitated calf and say that our hands have not spilled this blood and our eyes have not witnessed it. As the Rambam explains, they are saying that they have not allowed this person to leave their city with insufficient guard or without any food to protect him, therefore removing their blame for his death. And in the Kohanim, the priests declare that God should forgive the Jewish people for the death of this person. Although this is clearly a ceremony with deep mystical significance, the Rambam in his Guide for the Perplexed, Meir Nevuchim, gives simple explanations that we can understand intellectually even some of the effects of this commandment. One thing that Rambam says is that after such a ceremony, people will come to talk about the murder. And therefore, when word gets around and people speak, eventually evidence might be unearthed and the murderer will eventually be found. Another reason that after such a dramatic ceremony, the people of the city, the inhabitants, and the judges and elders will be more careful to protect people leaving the city in the future. The Chumash also specifies where exactly the ceremony should take place. They must find a Nachal Eson, as described in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 21, verse 4. The Rambam describes this Nachal Eson as a swiftly flowing stream, and it is by this stream that the calf is slaughtered. Prohibition 309 deals with this area. And the prohibition is given in the same verse, verse 4, which states, they go to a place, asher lo ye'aved bei, v'lo yizareya. It shall never be worked, and it shall never be planted. And this is prohibition 309, that the immediate area, surrounding the area, the place where this ceremony occurs, may never again be planted and never again be worked. And cultivating this area is violating a biblical commandment. In Sefer HaMitzvahs, the Rambam brings a proof that this is considered to be a separate prohibition and not merely part of the commandment of Egla Rufa by quoting a Talmudic discussion in the tractate Makis, which counts all the different sorts of mitzvahs for which one could be punishable by lashes. And the Talmud asks, what about the prohibition of planting in a Nachal Eson, in this area surrounding the swiftly flowing stream? This also you get lashes for, implies the Gemara. And the Rambam says that from this Gemara we see clearly that there is a biblical prohibition against planting or working this area, and also that one would incur lashes for planting there. The details of both these mitzvahs are discussed in the tractate Seita, towards the end of this tractate. The Tzemach Tzedek in Derech Mitzvah Secha explains, according to Hasidic philosophy, why it is that this sacrifice is not brought in the temple, as all other sacrifices are. If this is brought as atonement, it should be brought on the Mizbeach, on the altar. Why is it brought only outside the altar, and even in an uninhabited place by a freely flowing stream? The Tzemach Tzedek explains that the sacrifices brought in the temple, which were brought as an atonement, could only accomplish atonement for an unintentional sin, b'shegeg. Should it be an intentional sin, the sacrifice itself would not accomplish a kapara, an atonement. Therefore, it would be impossible to bring this sort of sacrifice in the temple, since this was most probably a murder bemazed intentionally. Otherwise, why is the murderer still hiding? If so, if a sacrifice cannot be brought, since it was an intentional murder, why then do we bring an Egla Ruf at all? If there is no way of atonement for the murderer, then why should we bring this sacrifice outside? And the Tzemach Tzedek answers that, true, this sacrifice does not achieve atonement for the murderer. As we see clearly, that the law is, if later on we should find the murderer, he is tried, and if convicted, put to death. Because this sacrifice has not accomplished an atonement for the murderer. Who here is being atoned for? The entire Jewish people are being atoned for, and specifically the people of that city. As the principle is, that Kol Yisroa Revim Zeba Zeh, we are all responsible for one another. Therefore, when a sin was done by another Jew, we are in some way responsible. And therefore, this sacrifice is brought not to atone for the murderer, but to atone for the rest of Jewish people, and to remove any sort of accusation there might be in the heavenly realm that the other Jews could have possibly done something to avoid this murder. The final two commandments of today's portion derive from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 22, verse 8, which states, V'asisa ma'ke l'gagecha, that you should make a fence or a guardrail around your roof, v'leisosim domim beveisecha, and therefore you will not be responsible for the blood in your house, ki yipel ha-nefel mimenu, when a person falls off from his dangerous exposed roof. The Rambam quotes the Sifri, which states from the words, v'asisa makel ha-gagecha, that you must place a guardrail around your roof, we see that there is a positive commandment, which is positive commandment 184, which is the responsibility not only to build a fence around your roof, but rather, even more so, to remove any dangerous situation which could cause loss of life by providing proper safeguards to ensure that no injury should occur. Therefore, it applies, says the Rambam, not only to a roof, but even if one had a pit or a pool or some other dangerous situation, whether full or empty, that if a person fell off of it or into it, They could come to a life-threatening situation. We have a positive commandment of improving and correcting this dangerous situation. The end of the verse, V'leisosim domim beveisecha, you should not allow this dangerous situation to exist, is explained by the Sifri as being a prohibition. Do not allow this to exist. We have a prohibition of allowing any danger to remain, whereas a person could get seriously hurt. This prohibition, the Rambam tells us, is discussed in the Jerusalem Talmud at the beginning of Shkolim and in many places in Seder Nezikin in that part of the Talmud, whereas the positive commandment is discussed primarily in that section of the tractate Baba Kama. In his legal code, the Rambam tells us that the law is that not only are you forbidden from placing someone else in danger, but you are also not allowed to place yourself in danger. And even if the person says, it's okay, I will take the risk, he is forbidden from doing so, and would get lashes by rabbinic decree, makas mardus. Therefore, we find in the Rambam's legal code, and in many cases brought down in Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, to La Halacha, many different cases we are prohibited from being involved in because they are dangerous. For example, one is prohibited from crossing a river where there is high running water. Because of the danger, one will be swept away. Similarly, one should not cut a piece of meat while holding the meat in one's hand, since the knife could slip and cut through the meat into the hand. So too, one should not place money in one's mouth, where the reason is given that some condition could have been transferred to the coins by someone with a sort of disease or with tzeras, and through putting it in one's mouth, he could perhaps catch that disease. Other interesting cases are mentioned, such as placing food underneath a bed, food or drink. As the story also goes from the Rebbe Rashab, that he once had a shaila, he asked, as seen in the Igreis, because he placed tobacco underneath the place where he was sleeping, not only food. The reason for this is that a ruach ra, a spirit of impurity, descends upon the food. Another interesting prohibition mentioned by the Rambam is that we are forbidden from selling weapons to non-Jews, for fear that later on they will use these weapons against us. In Lakuta Teda, the Alter Rebbe explains another idea of placing a fence around a roof. There the Alter Rebbe explains that what can a person do after having committed a sin? In order to fully do tshuva, the person must, so to speak, rebuild a house. It is not enough to replace that part, metaphorically speaking, of the house which has become unsteady and had damage done to it. Rather, if it's serious damage, the whole house must be fixed. And so too here, in order to properly do tshuva, a person must rebuild the entire house, change their entire personality, and do a full tshuva. And in the words of Kabbalah and Chassidus, rebuild the kelim, binyan hamalchus, rebuild all of the supernal worlds that he has damaged through his tshuva. However, even more is required. The person must afterwards put a fence around this roof. The roof of the house is a place a person could fall off, and the person must ensure that he will not return to the same misdeed in the future. Therefore, he must put around the roof, he must put a fence to ensure that in the future he shall not fall off, which this is the true tshuva when he ensures that he will not return to the previous misdeed he has performed. Thank you for tuning in to Sefer Mitzvahs, a project of Sichos in English. For more information or to sponsor one of the installments, contact Sichos in English at area code 718-778-5436. That's 718-778-5436. And please join us again tomorrow.